Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Friday, April 3rd, 2020. Section A. Nearly half of counties infected in their 20s. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HearstNP.com. Another three cases of COVID-19 were confirmed in Midland County on Thursday, and that includes two more 20-somethings. That means the number of confirmed cases as of Thursday afternoon was 19, and 20-somethings make up nearly half of the cases. The City of Midland Health Department reported at Thursday morning's press conference, 17th case is a female in her 50s, the 18th case is a female in her 20s, the 19th case is a male in his 20s. Midland Health tested all the newly confirmed cases, and the source of exposure for all three currently is unknown. None of the three have been admitted to the hospital. They are quarantining at home, according to the city. Earlier in the day, the health department reported that people 20 to 29 made up the most of any age range in Midland, with 7. That number rose to 9 Thursday. Other changes to the makeup of the confirmed cases in Midland County is that 10 of the 19 cases have been male. All confirmed cases, according to the city, are quarantining at home. It is not surprising, Midland Memorial Hospital Chief Medical Officer Larry Wilson said, of the number of 20-somethings. It is consistent with what we know, that younger persons tend to be more socially connected. They can carry it and spread it. With this infection, they are a vector, or carrier of the disease. Some get sick, but nearly all recover. It is more apparent in the elderly and in vulnerable persons by virtue of more severe presentations. Statewide, there have been 4,669 cases reported and 70 deaths. The Texas Department of State Health Services reports that Midland's 19 cases would rank 30th of all the counties in the state, and that's from information as of 8 p.m. Wednesday. And while Midland County's number of cases increased to 19, the number in Ector County jumped Thursday from 11 to 15. Taylor County, which includes Abilene, was at 14 as of Wednesday evening, while Lubbock was at 108, 89 more than Midland. Midland Health CEO Russell Myers said Thursday there have been 439 tests taken at Midland Memorial or at one of its facilities. Of those, 243 were negative, and officials wait for results from 114. Myers said census in the hospital on Thursday morning was 117, and that 84 visited the emergency department on Wednesday, an extraordinarily low number. There are 20 patients who are persons under investigation for coronavirus, 10 in the critical care unit, and 10 in the medical surgical unit. The higher number, according to Midland Health officials, represents a change in the way the hospital classifies patients. Myers said 99 of 44 ventilators are being used, plus MMH has a supply of 37 single-use or disposable ventilators. We still have ample supply, Myers said. Mayor, gift after Sam's stabbing is what's expected from Basin residents. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HearstNP.com. Midland community leaders celebrated a gift of medical supplies from the Midland-Odessa Chinese Association during the Unified Command Team press conference Thursday at the Midland County Annex. The donation included 4,850 regular masks, 500 N95 masks, and 650 pairs of disposable gloves. Midland Mayor Patrick Payton wanted to acknowledge the donation just weeks after a racial motivated attack when 19-year-old Jose Gomez stabbed members of an Asian family at Sam's Club in West Midland. The FBI, in a report, called the March 14th incident a hate crime, and the man, according to ABC News report citing the FBI analysis, admitted attempting to kill the family members because he thought the family was Chinese and infecting people with the coronavirus. What we're going to see today is how a community, even after coming under attack, steps up to the plate, just like you would expect people from the Permian Basin to do, in order to show their love and care for our community. So in front of me are basically boxes filled with masks and gloves from the Permian Basin Chinese American community. And quite simply, their note on the box says, "Stay strong together, we will overcome." And I, quite frankly, cannot think of a better example and a better encouragement to our city, to our region, to Midland, Odessa, and to the entire Permian Basin, that in the hardest of times, the most difficult times, and even the most personally insulting and injurious times, the community steps up and says, "We want to show you how much we are a part of this community. We want to show you how much we love you. We care for you, and we're doing everything we can to be in this battle with you till we get to the other side." The Permian Basin Chinese American community said in a statement, "Chinese Americans have a long-standing presence in the Permian Basin. As members of the diverse Permian community, we work and raise families here, and we are proud to call West Texas home. At the wake of the coronavirus pandemic and seeing its impact to our community, the Midland-Odessa Chinese Association would like to support the people working on the front line and join the community in the fight. Our message to the community, together we will overcome." Russell Myers, CEO of Midland Health, said the donation adds to the generosity provided by other Midlanders and people around the region. He said Thursday that a foundation has stepped forward to cover the cost of COVID-19 testing. He also said there are enough N95 protective respirators to last up to 138 days at the current rate of use. Myers also echoed the mayor's comments about the donation from the Permian Basin Chinese American community. "Thank you all very much," Myers said. "You all know that personal protective equipment is a precious resource, and during this time in the hospital, for first responders and for all sorts of folks who are taking care of patients, every donation we get is of tremendous help. Thank you all very much." Health Department. Whereabouts not tracked before patients showed symptoms. Future investigations to include where people went 48 hours before being symptomatic, by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HurstNP.com. The City of Midland Health Department will start investigating where those confirmed to have COVID-19 had traveled to, including inside Midland, 48 hours before being symptomatic. Becky Smith, nursing supervisor for the health department, said Thursday during the Unified Command Team press conference that Texas Department of Health and Human Service officials told health department officials across the state Wednesday to start investigating where confirmed cases were 48 hours before they became symptomatic, just because they could have exposed someone. So that will be part of our current investigations. On out. Smith said, up to this point, City of Midland Department officials had been asked to investigate exposure as far as travel or whether it took place in the community. As far as investigating where they were, as far as being contagious, Smith said, the state and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommended the day of symptoms onward. They told us Wednesday to start doing 48 hours ahead, so we were following CDC guidelines. The Health Department also reported Thursday that of the 16 cases, 9 were male and 7 female, and that the most cases of any age range is 20 to 29, with 7. The 15 patients still living are all recovering at home. Lastly, 10 of the cases were travel-related, 4 were by close contact, and 2 were community transmission. Those numbers changed with the announcement of 3 new confirmed cases later in the day. UT report provides coronavirus projections. Up to 30,000 Midlanders could be infected by peak if there's no social distancing. By Caitlin Randall, CRANDLE at MRT.com. A report from University of Texas at Austin estimates 20,000 to 30,000 Midlanders could be infected with coronavirus as it reaches its peak. The report, released earlier this week, analyzed 22 cities in Texas and projects the number of residents who will be infected in those cities, when the virus will peak, and when the resulting number of hospitalizations and deaths. The estimates are not forecasts and do not represent the full range of uncertainty, the report states, but are meant to be used as plausible scenarios for gauging the likely impacts of social distancing measures in Texas cities. About 30,000 Midlanders could be infected if there are no social distancing precautions taken. That projection shows COVID-19 peaking on May 25th. If schools remain closed through August 17th and residents reduce contact with others outside their households by 50%, Midland will reduce the number of infections and lengthen the time between infections, the analysis shows. About 20,000 people would be infected in this projection, with the virus peaking in July. The first projection, with no social distancing, shows the majority of infections occurring over a 3-month period between April and June. This has the potential to overwhelm Midland Memorial Hospital, as the report estimates 1,500 people could require hospitalization at the virus's peak in this scenario, and between 150 and 200 residents would die. Hospitalizations could be reduced by 1/3, down to 1,000, if residents reduce outside contact by 50%, the report shows. The number of Midlanders projected to die in this scenario is between 100 and 150. Closing schools through August 17th and practicing 50% social distancing would lengthen the duration of the virus to a 4 to 5 month period and decrease the sharpness of its peak, according to the report. Experts have frequently described this as flattening the curve so as not to overwhelm healthcare providers and available resources. Projections for Odessa are largely the same as those for Midland. The report estimates up to 1.5 million people could be infected in both the Houston and Dallas metro areas, 4 million in Austin, 150,000 in El Paso, and 60,000 in Lubbock. The report states its estimates are initially based on the number of reported cases in a city as of March 22nd. The parameters for the study were an epidemic doubling time of 4 days, reproduction number of 2.2, average incubation period of 7.1 days, and the proportion of asymptomatic cases being 17.9%. The results of the study were shared before peer review to provide intuition for policymakers regarding the immediate threat of COVID-19. The risks of medical surges, and the extent to which early social distancing measures can mitigate the threat. Our projections indicate that COVID-19 may quickly exceed healthcare capacity across Texas cities, and that extensive social distancing measures can both delay and diminish pandemic surges. Officials with Midland Health said Thursday they had not had a chance to study the report and therefore couldn't comment on it. They did say that the report could be used for planning purposes for a worst-case scenario. Odessa doctor tests positive for COVID-19 by Caitlin Randall, CRANDLE at MRT.com. An OB-GYN in Odessa has tested positive for the COVID-19, according to a post on his practice's Facebook page. He is not experiencing symptoms. Dr. Ghassan Fanous was exposed on Saturday by someone who was not yet showing symptoms, according to the post. After the person became symptomatic, they were tested for COVID-19 and the results came back positive Tuesday morning. Fanous tested himself that day and received his test results Wednesday night. His wife, Jenny, said he self-quarantined and did not see any patients after learning he had been exposed by someone who tested positive. He did see 15 patients on Monday before he was aware he had been exposed to the virus. The thing is, when we go back to work, if he doesn't die from the virus and we open back up, then we are going to continue to have exposure because this is a virus, Jenny Fanous said in a phone interview. We are doing as much as we can humanly do. This is the reality of being in a medical office. She shared on Facebook that he had tested positive because we decided to be transparent. They also wanted to let patients know the office was closed and thought patients needed to know it was because Fanous had tested positive. It's not easy to tell the entire city my husband has this illness, she said. Fanous said there have been accusations on social media that he saw patients knowing he had the virus, which she strongly denied. She said they have been receiving hateful messages since she shared the post. She had originally shared a post saying a staff member had tested positive, but deleted it because she thought it was too vague. Fanous said she believes social media users misconstrued her deleting the post as the office hiding something and began spreading unfounded rumors. Under no circumstances did Dr. Fanous see patients knowing he was positive. If you have seen information to the contrary, know that in the almost 20 years Dr. Fanous has served our community, he has only acted in the best interest of his patients. He would never compromise their health or the health of the community. All employees at the practice have been tested and none are currently symptomatic, according to the post. Fanous declined to provide any information on the person who exposed her husband to the virus and declined to say if they were a patient, saying it would be a HIPAA violation. The post states the person was never in the office and was tested outside of the office. MISD, Students to Get Feedback, Not Grades, by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HearstNP.com. Midland ISD is entering a new phase of its academic plan, and like the previous one, grades will not be a part of the determining academic achievement. Midland ISD Chief of Staff Katie Atkins said Thursday that the move to a virtual platform, including Google Classrooms, will provide different ways for a student to reach a teacher for the academic discussions that will take place. She also said the district and its teachers and learning staff are moving toward providing feedback and performance monitoring. We are still not taking grades, Atkins said. I know there are different thoughts about grades and things of that nature, but given the disparities with technology access in homes, it is not fair for all of our students to be treated exactly the same in that regard. Atkins said the district is working to acquire 1,000 hotspots and that those are in very high demand right now. As hotspots or other internet equipment are provided to campus leaders, the district will communicate with the families of its 26,000-plus students so that we're not moving forward with a bunch of people rushing up to school at one time. It's going to be a very careful, calculated process, and information about distributing the hotspots will be available in the coming days. Atkins said many questions will be answered as the district has its discussions with the Texas Education Agency. These questions range from best practices for grading for the rest of the 2019/20 school year, how to determine if students will progress from one grade to the next, or how class rankings will be determined. When asked about whether the end of the school will be canceled, Atkins said the district wants to be consistent with Governor Greg Abbott. For now, that means schools may not start before May 4th. She said it is important for the district also to be consistent with entities such as the Texas Education Agency. Other highlights from Midland ISD's presentation at the Thursday morning press conference include: maintaining social distancing is preventing district officials from visiting homes of students they haven't been able to reach, and a mental health support hotline will be set up so students can talk to a Midland ISD counselor. The hotline will be manned 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Crisis counselors are available to anyone in the community by calling 1-877-420-3962. That service is free, Atkins said. Hospital District. Sales tax election won't be in June. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HearstMP.com. The Midland County Hospital District, it appears, will not plan the postponed sales tax election for June. The board approved during a special meeting on Thursday the paperwork to postpone the May election to a future date, but Midland Health CEO Russell Myers said advice from council and others have led him to the conclusion that a June election date is not possible. In January, the hospital district approved holding an election on May 2nd to raise the sales tax inside the city and county a quarter of 1%. The revenue generated from the tax collected, if approved by voters inside Midland County, will help make up for revenue lost because of expected cuts in federal funding. Last week, the hospital district board voted to consider other dates for the election. The Midland County Elections Office had urged the postponement of a May election, and the governor's office gave the go-ahead as Governor Greg Abbott issued a proclamation last month allowing local elections set for May 2nd to be postponed. A June election would have provided hospital district officials with a full fiscal quarter of sales tax funding, assuming voter approval, that will not be available with an election later in the year. The next possible window for a municipal election, according to Myers, is in August. Should voters approve the quarter cent increase during an August election, the tax wouldn't be implemented until January, according to district officials citing the Texas Comptroller's Office. Should voters approve the ballot item, the tax increase could provide an extra $30 million for the hospital district to use for community health care services funding, including nonprofits, the Midland Community Health Care Services, contracted physicians, mental health services, ER calls, and Texas Tech University Health Science Center. Hospital district officials report that more than $40.147 million was spent in those areas in fiscal year 2019. Benefits of community health care services include compensation paid to more than 200 physicians, more than 75% of active medical staff. The approved paperwork allows the postponement of the May election to November, or an earlier date if permitted through a court order or by the governor's office. Myers told the board Thursday he doesn't expect to approach Governor Greg Abbott's office until after the current executive order ends in May. Costco's Midland location in holding pattern, from staff reports. Costco's Midland location appears to be in a holding pattern right now, according to information from the City of Midland. City officials told the Reporter-Telegram this week that Costco has received an extension on closing its West Midland land deal. Plans have been that Costco warehouse would build a 36-acre development northwest of the intersections of State Highways 191 and 158. With the COVID-19 issues, they have been busy with logistics and did not have time to finalize their decision, wrote Charles Harrington, Director of Development Services for the City of Midland's Development Office. They still want to be in Midland, but are in a holding pattern right now. Harrington also said that the oil price downturn is contributing to the delay. In December, the Midland City Council voted on an agreement with Costco Warehouse that could mean the reimbursement of $7 million in sales tax collected over a 15-year period. They have 6 months to move forward on their annexation, platting, and building permit submittal, Harrington wrote. Death Notice. Jerry Lewis Oldacre passed away on March 31st in Andrews. The family will have a private celebration of life at a later date. Arrangements were made with Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. He is survived by his wife, Anita, daughter, Pam, son, Wayne, and daughter, Vicky, 3 brothers and 3 sisters, 11 grandchildren, 13 great-grandchildren, and 2 great-great-grandchildren.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Friday, April 3rd, 2020, Section A. Staying Safe. Officers and Deputies Gear Up by Royal McGregor. As coronavirus cases continue to mount within Ector County, local law enforcement agencies have increased the use of medical supplies while on duty. Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths said each deputy has the choice of wearing an issued mask and gloves during routine traffic stops, but it's a practice that he's encouraging. Griffiths said he's also asked his deputies to distance themselves when possible, but he knows there's inherent risk as peace officers. This isn't a job. This is a way of life, Griffiths said. This is what we are sworn to do. This is what we have chosen to do in our life, protect our community. If that means we put our lives in jeopardy, that's what we do. We run towards the gunfire. Law enforcement agencies have always had to be aware of other diseases, AIDS, HIV, hepatitis, or tuberculosis. Odessa Police Department Chief Michael Gerke said officers have also been given the opportunity to wear masks and gloves while on patrol. Gerke said he's also reiterated to officers the cleanliness of their patrol units. Even when I was a patrolman, you always wear gloves and you always had hand sanitizer, Gerke said. We would use those things religiously. You always disinfected your vehicle. Those are things that we've always done. We are just putting a little more emphasis on it now. Griffiths said every deputy has a mask available. Ector County Sheriff's Office has handed out masks, and the sheriff explained during a phone interview Tuesday afternoon that the department is expecting more masks this week. Griffiths said those masks will be handed out to the deputies, so his staff won't be wearing the same masks all the time. If they so desire, they can wear the mask and gloves, Griffiths said. As long as they are in a state uniform and wearing their badge, we are going to allow them to wear a mask if they so choose. Friday, Ector County received its first coronavirus positive, and in the following days, that number has risen to 15. Griffiths said these past couple of weeks have not only been physically demanding, but mentally draining. According to the Texas Tribune, as of April 1st, there are at least 4,669 coronavirus cases in Texas. There were 70 reported deaths, and at least 50,679 tests have been run. We are in a tough spot, Griffiths said. We just have to continue doing what we are doing. We are an essential part of the community. We have to keep doing what we are doing and try to use the proper precautions to minimize the chance of getting coronavirus. Griffiths explained, each inmate is screened before entering the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. He said the jail has cells that can be specifically used for people suspected with coronavirus. According to Griffiths, the same cells that would be used for people suspected with coronavirus are the same ones that are currently used for inmates with tuberculosis. Griffiths said the air doesn't escape into the facility. It is exhausted through the roof. We are screening everybody, Griffiths said. If we feel like someone might possibly be infected with coronavirus, we are separating those individuals until we feel like they are okay. This is not a sprint. Doctor Warns to Prepare for Marathon by Michael Merlo. Odessa Regional Medical Center Chief Medical Officer Dr. Rohith Saravanan said that the process for battling COVID-19 is more of a marathon than a sprint after Odessa received its 15th positive case of the virus. We're not looking to finish this off and be done with it in a week, 2 weeks. This is a marathon. This is going to be here for a while, so we need to prepare ourselves while we're talking about this. Even though our news conference times may be shorter, frequency may be less. It doesn't mean that message is less important. This is a long-term thing that all of us need to plan for. He said that they don't have an exact prediction of how long the outbreak could last, and that although there are many models that predict the virus will peak in a matter of months, that those are guesses based off academic research and aren't completely accurate, he said. Medical Center Hospital CEO and President Russell Tippin announced at the press conference that the health department had reported 15 positives. He said that MCH has 4 patients who have tested positive, 3 of whom are in critical condition on ventilators, while the other recovered and was discharged. MCH has received 38 negative tests, with 16 of those pending approval. Saravanan reported that ORMC has 51 tests sent out in total, 27 pending, 6 positive, and 18 negative cases. He said that they have 5 patients related to the virus in the hospital, 2 of whom are still in the ICU on ventilators. The other 3 are persons under investigation. He also presented a sheet put out by the Texas Health and Human Services, which details a strategy for those who aren't tested for releasing cases and contacts from home isolation and quarantine. Ector County Judge Debbie Hayes said in a phone interview that the Emergency Operations Center has received over 15 calls for people who want to help volunteer as coronavirus spread investigators. She added that those who apply will go through training and that UTPB and Odessa College are both working with the EOC to get medical students in the area clinical hours. She said volunteers would call those who have tested positive for the virus and investigate who they have been in contact with at home or at their jobs, as well as anywhere they have visited. Then they would call those who may have been in contact with the positive case and ask the questions set up by the CDC. If anyone is interested in volunteering, they can call 432-241-1560. One of the new positive cases in Ector County is Dr. Ghassan Fanous, an Odessa obstetrician gynecologist who has his own practice and has privileges at ORMC and MCH. Fanous' test results were shared on his Facebook page. In a phone interview, he said that he had contact with a friend Saturday who he had tested on Monday in the parking lot of his clinic. The friend he tested reported no symptoms Saturday, mild symptoms Sunday, and no symptoms on Monday. Fanous said that on Tuesday morning he delivered a baby at a hospital wearing full personal protective equipment before returning to the office at around 9 a.m., where he discovered his friend's test results were positive. He then said he swabbed himself, left the office, and quarantined. He received his own positive test results Wednesday night. When asked if he should have self-quarantined after test swabbing his friend, he said, "If it's somebody with mild symptoms, then the answer really is, when somebody as mild as that, the answer is no." When asked which hospital the baby was delivered at, he said that he didn't know if he could give that information. Fanous is asymptomatic and continues to work from home. COVID-19 news. By the numbers, Ector County confirmed cases 15. Ector County negative 29 out of 99 tested with 55 pending. Midland County 19 confirmed out of 439 tested. One death. Texas, 4,669 confirmed with 50,679 tested. Total Texas deaths, 70. U.S. cases, 213,144 total confirmed and 4,513 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/tztrjlf. OC Fund. Odessa College has created an emergency scholarship fund to cover tuition costs of students impacted by COVID-19. The Financial Aid Office has received dozens of requests for assistance this week, an announcement on the OC website said. At the Wrangler Food Pantry, more than 80 bags of food or supplies were distributed to students during the last 2 weeks. More food and supplies are needed to help a growing number of students who have been impacted by COVID-19, the announcement said. On the net, tinyurl.com/VLEOERR. Stimulus dollars. Direct payments will be sent to many within 3 weeks through the stimulus fund set up in response to COVID-19. The IRS will use 2019 tax returns if you have already filed this year. They will use 2018 if you have not. The banking information used for those returns will be used to distribute what looks to be about $1,200 per person. Last year, about 92 million people received refunds via direct deposit. That represents about 82% of people who received refunds and nearly 60% of all tax filers. ECRW provides masks to first responders by Michael Bauer. While most people in Odessa are trying to stay indoors as much as they can to avoid catching COVID-19, numerous first responders are still out and about every day doing their jobs. Members of the Ector County Republican Women, ECRW, are hoping to help them stay safe by providing masks. On Thursday, the group presented the masks to Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths in a small ceremony at the home of one of their members. The group made over 200 masks to donate to the first responders. We sent a text out to the ladies of the Ector County Republican Women and asked them if they would join us in making masks because we heard that the first responders were running short, ECRW President Sherry Hurt said. So we wanted to jump in and do what we can to help fight the coronavirus shortages that we were experiencing here in Odessa. These ladies jumped in, their seamstresses. They bought materials and taught each other how to make them and found out the medical way to make these correctly so that these would hold up correctly. Around 20 people pitched in to help make the masks, and they plan to continue making more to donate. These ladies said they were going to keep making them as long as they could, Hurt said. We're just proud of them for jumping in and filling a gap. We want our sheriffs and everyone to be safe in the community. The masks were made in the last 2 weeks. One of our newest members recruited her whole family to help out, Hurt said. She got her sister-in-law, and daughter. Hurt was glad of her group's skills to be able to produce a decent number of masks in just a short amount of time. These ladies are wonderful, Hurt said. The sheriff is one of our patron members, and him being one of our patrons makes us like him even more. Our members have great seamstress skills that I do not have. Judy taught people how to make them. Griffiths said the donation was very gratifying. It's very heartwarming that these ladies, as members of our community, are doing things to help us, Griffiths said. We have contact with the public that everyday citizens don't have, and many times we have to go hands-on. Last month, we had a deputy who made contact with a lady who tested positive at a later date with her husband. Nobody was expecting this situation that we have, and it's new to everyone. Each and every day, there's new information that comes to us, but it's very heartwarming. PBALC Faces Difficulties During Economic Downturn by Sam Waller. The coronavirus pandemic and economic downturn have become a potentially lethal combination for the Permian Basin Adult Literacy Center, PBALC. The nonprofit program, which in January added satellite locations in Odessa and Big Spring to its main location in Midland, has faced declining donations since last fall, Executive Director Alba Austin said. The developments since have left PBALC in a precarious position. We have about 2 months of cash flow, Austin said, and with bans on large gatherings, the future looks bleak. Our spring fundraiser, which was scheduled for May 1st, will more than likely be canceled, Austin said. Austin has sent a fundraising letter to PBALC supporters seeking monthly donations of $10, $20, or even $50 to help keep the program afloat. Contributions may be made online at the PBALC's website at www.pbalc.org/donate. Or by mail at 1709 West Wall Street, Midland, 79701. Thank you to the Permian Basin community for your continued support, Austin wrote. Your support matters to PBALC and to all the nonprofits doing good work. During the outbreak, the PBALC has pivoted its in-person classes to virtual and distance learning classes. However, we are finding that some of our students either do not have adequate technology resources and/or the digital literacy skills for virtual classrooms, Austin said. In addition, you have to remember we serve adults, and many of our students also have children at home at this time and are unable to log in to classes. The center was also unprepared to handle distance learning classes, as we did not have mobile resources such as laptops and significant virtual learning curriculum for staff or our volunteer instructors. However, we hope to continue offering our students learning opportunities through virtual meetings and other platforms. We are working with our instructors to provide digital, distance, and virtual learning opportunities for our students. Austin said PBALC will attempt to offer its full range of services as long as possible. Our hope is that we do not have to scale back on services. Before COVID-19, we actually had a waiting list of students who had literacy needs, whether that be students who need to learn English, improve their reading and writing skills, or improve their digital literacy skills, she said. The need for our services remains and keeps growing. Austin said PBALC's situation is not all that unusual. I can't speak on behalf of other nonprofits in the Permian Basin, but I do know that over half of the nonprofits across the nation typically only have a month of cash reserves, and most mid-sized and small nonprofits do not have large reserves, she said. Over 88% of nonprofits across the nation operate with less than $500,000 in annual gift revenue. Here in the Permian Basin, nonprofits are getting hit twice as hard due to the falling oil prices. Big layoffs in the Permian Basin may potentially happen, and that will significantly impact fundraisers, as companies who are struggling financially can't afford to give to events. In addition, the falling stock markets may also really reduce funds that foundations give this quarter and potentially the rest of the year. Austin said having more leeway in how to use funding would help ease matters. I would like to see more foundations and funders giving out unrestricted grants or funding general operating expenses, she said. Nonprofit needs this flexibility and autonomy right now to keep operations going. I would love to see longer-term commitments from funders to give grantees, nonprofits, the immediate boost they need to survive their short-term challenges. The donation made now is more vital to help charities and nonprofits through the difficult times they are facing right now. I would ask donors and philanthropists to consider giving more if they can. All this will give charities the greatest chance of survival, so that when the coronavirus crisis is over, charities will still be here to help the people who need them. Weekend meals stopped for now. Because of new guidance from the federal government, Ector County ISD Superintendent Scott Murray said the district will no longer be able to supply weekend meals to families, so Murray is asking for help. We're distributing almost 20,000 meals now, 5 days a week, so this is a really great opportunity for our community to stand up for and support our families in need, because we know we have a lot of families who are going to need these meals, Murray said in a phone interview Wednesday. He urged members of the faith, nonprofit, and business community to rally together and make sure these families are fed. The ECISD School Nutrition Department Director Brandon Reyes said in an email that the National School Lunch Program is based on a regular school week. In the immediate response to school closures, that was waived and allowed us to include weekend meals. We do not know the reason for now reverting the program back to the regular school week. We have talked with the food bank, and they do not have the ability to supply 40,000 meals each weekend. We will keep trying to find the means to bring back weekend meals, Reyes wrote. Texas Department of Agriculture Communications Director Mark Loeffler said in an email that traditionally, before the pandemic, school meals were not provided on the weekends because school was not in session. However, in this crisis, the traditional procedures for school operations have changed to fit current needs. Right now, a school could continue to serve those weekend meals, but under the existing guidelines, they are not able to be reimbursed by USDA for those meals. To change this, USDA will have to provide that change from the federal level, Loeffler wrote. Our food and nutrition division staff is aware of this issue in Ector County and has already made USDA aware of our concern. This will continue to develop today, and I'll get you more information as it becomes available, he added. Murray said the district was pleased to be able to provide the meals for the weekend on Friday. We knew that that was important. We knew that it was a need. And so again, I think right now it's an opportunity for our community to see what we can do as, again, our faith community, our nonprofits, and other organizations that might be able to meet the needs that we know exist, Neary said. The district was providing about 20,000 meals a day, and coupled with the economic downturn, Murray said the district expects to see that need increase over time. More than 50% of ECISD students live in poverty, Murray has said, before the coronavirus pandemic. A Facebook Live event was scheduled for Thursday at 7 p.m. on the ECISD Facebook page. It was to feature two teachers, and questions were expected to be taken from students, parents, and the community. Murray said he was looking forward to it, and the last one attracted about 500 attendees. Asked about special events usually held in April, Murray said everything that was scheduled for the month has been canceled because school is closed until at least May 4th. We're still talking about graduation and the possibilities there, but there are no decisions yet, he said. Choir director gets 97 months. A federal judge Thursday in Midland sentenced former Andrews Middle School choir director Gary Lynn Ragland to 97 months in federal prison on a child pornography charge, a news release from U.S. Attorney John F. Bash detailed. U.S. District Judge David Counts ordered that Ragland, 59, pay a $20,000 fine, a $5,000 assessment under the Justice for Victims of Trafficking Act, JVTA, and $35,000 in restitution. Counts also ordered that Ragland be placed on supervised release for a period of 10 years after completing his prison term. Ragland has remained in custody since his arrest, October 1, 2019. On November 21, 2019, Ragland pleaded guilty to one count of attempted receipt of child pornography. Court records on September 27, 2019, the school web filter flagged that pornography was being searched for off campus by a school-issued MacBook assigned to Ragland. He admitted to accessing child pornography on a daily basis and using that MacBook to view and or possess more than 5,000 images depicting child pornography. Court records further reveal that Ragland has also admitted to inappropriate touching of at least 4 identified adolescent victims' breasts and buttocks, as well as a previous incident he was accused of inappropriate touching a 12-year-old student. It was deemed unfounded, and he previously denied committing the act, but he now admits that what the child alleged actually happened. Even amid the coronavirus pandemic, we are still achieving justice for our most vulnerable victims. This middle school choir director admitted to inappropriately touching multiple children and to using his school-issued computer to download massive amounts of child pornography. He will now spend 97 months in federal prison, Bash said. The Andrews Police Department investigated this case along with the Texas Rangers. Assistant U.S. Attorney Austin Berry prosecuted this case on behalf of the government. This case was brought as part of Project Safe Childhood, a nationwide initiative to combat the epidemic of child sexual exploitation and abuse, launched in May 2006 by the Department of Justice. Led by U.S. Attorney's offices and the Criminal Division's Child Exploitation and Obscenity Section, Project Safe Childhood marshals federal, state, and local resources to better locate, apprehend, and prosecute individuals who exploit children via the internet, as well as to identify and rescue victims. For more information about Project Safe Childhood, please visit www.projectsafechildhood.gov. Man charged in connection to fatal shooting. A 22-year-old man was arrested after he reportedly was involved in a fatal shooting in West Odessa. Dalton Lee Gilcrease was charged with murder, a first-degree felony. The reported fatal shooting happened around 9:20 p.m. Wednesday evening in the 300 block of North Yolanda Avenue, an ECSO press release detailed. A deputy reportedly saw several people outside the residence. He secured the scene, found a handgun believed to have been used, and was told the victim was inside the house. The victim was a 38-year-old man who was on the kitchen floor with a gunshot wound to his chest, a press release stated. Two women provided help to him. Paramedics reportedly arrived on scene as the victim was unresponsive and the medical examiner was contacted. The 38-year-old was pronounced dead at the scene. Investigation showed an argument turned physical and ended with a gunshot, a press release detailed. Gilcrease was arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. He has one bond totaling $200,000 and was still in custody as of Thursday morning, jail records show. Man charged in fatal collision involving 18-wheeler. The 42-year-old man was arrested after he reportedly was involved in a fatal collision after he continued to drive an 18-wheeler without proper rest. Ranjit Singh was charged with manslaughter, a second-degree felony, and aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a second-degree felony. The reported fatal collision happened around 4:08 p.m. March 19th in the 1200 block of East I-20 in Odessa, an Odessa Police Department press release detailed. The investigation reportedly showed Singh had been driving for more than 16 hours without proper rest, which is a violation of the Federal Hours of Service Regulation. Based on those facts, the OPD traffic unit obtained warrants for Singh. The U.S. Marshals Service located Singh in California and arrested him on the listed warrants, the press release stated. An OPD report detailed that Ricky Enriquez, 26, of Odessa, stopped for construction in a black Dodge truck in the westbound lane of I-20, while Manuel Rodriguez, 40, and passenger Amber Sahagan, 39, both of Decatur, traveled in a white Jaguar behind Enriquez. Singh, 42, of New York, was also traveling west on I-20 in an 18-wheeler. The report details that Singh failed to control the speed of the 18-wheeler and collided into the back of the Jaguar, causing the Jaguar to collide into the back of the Dodge truck. OPD and OFR reportedly responded to the scene, where Sahagan was pronounced deceased on the scene, while Rodriguez was transported to a local hospital with life-threatening injuries. OPD officers stung by bees. Two Odessa Police Department officers who were hospitalized Wednesday after they were attacked by bees in central Odessa are recovering at home. The area near Dixie Boulevard and Walnut Avenue was blocked off for several hours due to a swarm of bees, a City of Odessa press release detailed. Six people were attacked by bees, and two Odessans were treated at the scene, while the two other Odessans and the two officers were taken to the hospital. Some were stung more than 100 times.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.